other than that announcement, we have a lot of little things to tell you. As you know, we are still in January, and we're under the title of The Path of Spiritual Evolution. And on Sundays, our doors open at 10:30. The class starts from 11 and ends promptly at noon. The discussion for next Sunday is the two paths of spiritual development. And today we'll be talking about making spiritual progress in an age of materialism. Very timely. Then, on Wednesday evenings, we have our study class from 7:30 to 8:30. We're studying in The Key of Theosophy by HPB. Also on Wednesday, our reference library is open from 5:15 to 7:15. It's a theosophical library, but there are other things of science and philosophies that are in there. And if one wants to read, if there's any type of a reference in dealing with the discussion, they can always go in and read what the reference would be. And also on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, which will be the 18th, we are talking about the eternal reward and punishment and on Nirvana. That will be the discussion for Wednesday evening. So that's our announcements. Now we would like to read the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, which is interesting. Wherever one goes throughout the world to a lodge, this declaration is the same. It is followed by the students who are trying to apply themselves to the philosophy. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with the declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So we will now approach our idea of the talk for this morning, which we will have a student present to us, and it's called Making Spiritual Progress in an Age of Materialism. And afterwards, we will have time for questions, comments, and answers.
An English poet from the 19th century named Christina Rossetti wrote these well-known lines. Does the road wind uphill all the way? Yes, to the very end. Does the journey take the whole day long? From morn to night, my friend. These words are a personification of the life of those who are truly treading the spiritual path. And whatever differences are to be found in the various presentations of esoteric doctrine, in any age of man, we will assuredly find the fullest agreement upon one point, and that is how to get on the road to spiritual development. There is only one inflexible rule that has forever been binding upon all men. From the Vedas and the Upanishads to the Gita and the Light on the Path, search as we may through the Bibles of every race and cult, we find but only one way, hard, painful, troublesome, by which you and I can progress to true spiritual insight and knowledge. And that, dear hearts, would be the complete overcoming of the lower nature by the higher. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says to raise the self by the self, which means to raise the lower self, that part of us that is troublesome, temporary, mischievous, with the help of that which is good, and that which is the higher, and that which is the nobler. Raise the self by the self. It does not say that you can raise the self with the help of mere books, or of teachers, or with the help of some religion or philosophy, but that you can raise the lower self with the help of the higher self. It is a process within ourselves, something that we have to do, each one of us, with the help of our own soul. Now, what is the lower self? What is it, that which we call the higher self, or the soul? The lower self is that which acts because of and with our likes and dislikes, our very own passions and desires. That which is known as the higher self does action which has to be done. In essence, dharma, which means lawful and true duty. Asking the person for the doing of the action and finding the right method of doing that particular action, the higher self then acts. Take any action. Eating is an action. Walking is an action. Speaking is an action. All these are generally done because we like it, or not done because we don't like it. That is the lower. People do things, and if you ask them why, they simply say, I like it. What has that to do with it? That is the action of the lower. You may ask if I can give you a reason. Can I point a way that is right according to true knowledge? That, dear hearts, is theosophy. Then it does not become an action of the lower, but an action of the higher, the soul. All the actions of life which are done from the point of view of reason and discrimination, of giving the right value to a thing, that is the action of the higher self. Through that, the lower self is raised. So how does that work? We eat food that affects the body. We walk. Walking affects our body. We speak. Speak affects our moral nature. We think a thought. That affects our mental nature. You can eat, but if your thought, reasoning, and discrimination is not used, the food affects you in a lower way, for it is the action of the lower self. If your discrimination is used in eating, then your higher nature is affected also. Therefore, Krishna says, whatever you do, eat or walk or sleep, all simple things, do it for and as the higher self. We are all souls, and to act as souls means that. That is the reason, and the only real and only religious ceremony each one of us can perform. Simply stated, that's it. Sounds pretty easy. So why aren't we all Buddhas or Krishnas? Perhaps, just perhaps, it isn't as easy as it sounds. Well, what could be the obstacles? Let's explore that question for a moment or two. Well, for one thing, we are in Kali Yuga, the last and shortest of the four great ages of the Hindu system. The other three stages are gold, silver, and bronze. These ages indicate psychological or mental and the physical states of men during that period or duration of time. In this sense, the Kali Yuga is the age of iron, of darkness, of misery and sorrow. The falling of spirit into the degradation of matter with all of its horrific results. The characterizations of the present time show it clearly enough. For while physical civilization is high, the spiritual side of it is low and dark, and selfishness and materialism is the prevailing order. We can, however, reap some comfort from the theory given out at various times that in Kali Yuga, a small effort goes farther for results than the same when made in a better age. In the other ages, the rates of all things are slower than this. Hence, evil now seems quick, but in the same way, good is also much quicker in effect and reach than in a slower time. And along with the Kali Yuga is the problem or obstacle of our attachment to the materialistic world that we are a vital part of. Most people today, including spiritual people, who should know better, believe that materialism, materialist, or materialistic refer to a person, a people, a culture, or a society, which is chiefly motivated by the acquisition of money, possessions, material goods, exterior success, while quite probably at the same time having a superficial outlook on life, one which values and prizes appearance, fame, wealth above all else. While it is true that this is an expression of materialism, it is not what the word actually means. Materialism is originally and primarily a physiological term and means the belief and conviction that there is nothing above or beyond material, objective life. That material is all that there is. That everything is essentially physical, biological, chemical, and mechanical. And that the idea of soul and spirit are ignorant delusions. From the point of view of the soul, there is only one real obstacle to spiritual progress, and that is our failure to see that in whatever befalls us, there is a lesson to be learned, and therefore a golden opportunity to grow in strength and understanding. In the first few sentences of this talk, I stated that progress towards true spiritual insight and knowledge could be hard, could be painful and troublesome. But let me ask you, could we gain strength without overcoming weakness? Would we have any opportunities to progress without overcoming obstacles? Your life, all of our lives, are made up of events and circumstances which are merely self-created lessons which make it possible for man to ascend under law the various grades that go to make up that great school of self-learning which we call human existence. In closing, it is your effort, and only your self-induced and self-devised efforts, that become the lone way that you can lift yourself. There is no one on this planet to push you or pull you along toward the spiritual progress that you seek. Once again, the topic for this morning, making spiritual progress in an age of materialism.
Thank you. So hopefully that's giving us a lot of questions within our own minds about, is this really possible? So we're open for any questions or comments. Yes.
So is materialism then not merely the acquisition of material goods, excess to one's needs, but also just thinking about it, and also can spiritual ideas be materialized? We're wondering.
Can spiritual ideas be materialized? From the talk, we get the idea we're talking of two separate camps, materialism and spiritualism. It would seem that they're two separate things. But if we look at the idea that we are truly spiritual beings incarnated into physical forms, material, to be able to gain experience, to be able to express experience, we would say that one can. It's like, you know, the old idea of the diet, the food idea, what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat, what's good for you and what isn't good for you. Well, how about a diet of our mind? We are thinkers. We can cleanse through what we think and still live in, quote, a materialistic world, which we cannot deny it is. It seems that the problem is where we think we really are and what we think we're not. So if we keep that in mind, that We're here to experience life. We're here to learn and relearn. That might give us an idea. Yes, way in the back.
Well, when we think about these spiritual ideas of any kind, we could look at many modern religions and see that the spiritual notion of the oneness of all life and the unknowable collectivity of the absolute has been materialized as an anthropomorphic god or saints or minor gods. There's even a line of Christianity where prosperity is said to be the symbol of that soul being blessed and full of grace. So, yes, these very high spiritual realities and truth can be twisted and covered and transformed.
Very true. But if we keep in mind that if we go back to the ancient, as ancient, quote, as we can, the teachings, there was universal brotherhood. There was unity. There were those who would go out, plant, nurture, bring it back into the land, and serve. It was a community type world. There were many great, shall we say, sages who walked the earth, who people saw and knew that these were people who do. Most of all the teachings, or we shouldn't even say most, we would say all the teachings that we find here in Theosophy are primarily Eastern teachings. And the funny thing is, no matter where you travel in the globe, whether it's north, south, east, or west, there is a universality of certain things that everyone expresses and everyone knows. And primarily, it's the ancient teachings that are bringing, that are coming forth now, that can express how one can live, quote, as he truly should be, and express as he truly should be, in any age, whether it be the Dark Age, the Bronze Age, the Silver Age, the Golden Age. We've all been through all those ages. We have all been before. We are reincarnating spiritual egos that enter into this form because this is the material, quote, that we have to work through. We need this physical body. Yes.
In an age of materialism, there's the common idea that in order to have happiness in this world, there needs to be the acquisition of those things. And the power to get those things in order to be happy. But if there is such a thing as spiritual progress, then what is real happiness, and how can it be achieved without necessarily depending on the opportunity or the acquisition of material things?
So how would we come about it? What would it be, is what you're saying? It would seem a vast freedom, a liberation, a not keeping up with the Joneses. Who cares? We need to look at life in a different situation. We need to think, primarily these ancient teachings, there are so many, but the basic ones are, one, an understanding of who and what we really are. We have, in the philosophy, we are have basically those three fundamental principles that have been here forever and will be here long after this physical form is gone. They're basic. There's the idea of a source, a deific principle, if you will, a universe of full consciousness on different degrees. They can be expressed from the lowest mineral to the, quote, highest man. Then you have the process of how it's done. It's re-embodiment. It's karma. It's reincarnation. It's re-embodiment. That's the process. And within that process, the great ages, we as thinking human beings should be able to express fully an idea of freedom, and yet we are held back. And then we have that whole idea of the evolution. What is the purpose? It's to regain the knowledge we already have, the wisdom within from eons and eons of times of development. And it's to be able to stand on our own two feet. Not what you're telling me to do, or he's telling me to do, or I'm telling you what to do. Stand on our own feet. Look within and try to find that center that you could learn as the Buddha did. Walk that middle path, not too high, not too low. We are in total the observer of all we participate in. We have forgotten and we're become the participation. And we don't give that time to put alone for ourselves to think. Yes, in the back.
In the Gita, that is that idea of the acquisitions is treated as such. It says, and I'm paraphrasing, both poverty and riches are treated the same. They're judged the same. It doesn't change the man. True happiness is found within. If you seek true happiness, it is to go within, not to seek it outside of yourself, not to seek it through the acquirements of cars or buildings or things like that. It's within. That's the true happiness. All of this is but an illusion.
It's so true, yes.
So a practical way to express those ideas and reap that happiness would be any type of volunteerism. If we've ever done something selfless for another, we know the feeling we get back. It's an uplifting, not only that we provide, but we get the return of. So it reminds us of that universal brotherhood.
That is precisely, I guess, what you could say we're all trying to, as students, work towards, to be able to have that feeling. And as I said, volunteering of yourself to help another with no guidelines out there, it's a heart expression. It's watching a movie, it's watching a sunset, it's hearing somebody say beautiful things that is for everyone, that bring tears to our eyes, and we don't know why, but it's, and you look around and you see everybody else is starting to tear up. It's pulling from something within us that's stronger of anything that's without us. And this is what we need to look for, because it would make us go, as was stated, this Kali Yuga. It is the fastest, it is the shortest. So rather than be pulled down by it, we could be elated with the idea, I can improve my position in life, or any life, faster than any time period has ever been. This is the time in this materialistic, quote, fast-moving world, that we can gain that true knowledge within at a much faster pace. And that going within, that idea, there are many ideas, ancient ideas, that idea of meditating on some sort of a theme, the Buddha's teachings, that idea of walking that middle path, that everything around me, including myself, is on a journey of reopening. And we're all on that journey. Everyone is in their own place, but it's something, whether we realize it or we don't, it will come. We have to put ourselves where we can be observing what we think and how we think, and what do we feel is harmonious, what is balance, what is true, what is not true. We have to decide within ourselves, not something we hear or see or read. Yes, way in the back.
Mm-hmm. I guess that the thing that you just mentioned about the Kali Yuga being the fastest, is there a description of, so when I hear that and then in description, in conjunction with the other ages, gold being what I interpret as most spiritual and iron being most material, is there a description of why it's fastest in the most dense material Kali Yuga age?
Yeah. They say, or we could say the dark age, whichever. Think about it. And as was stated earlier, we've all been through these ages. The golden age was more of a pure age. We were not physically really as we are now, but it was an age where there was a blending, there was a knowing. We look at the idea of the sun. Every country has something that when you see the sun or hear of the sun, it's a universal, it's the same. Then you go from this beautiful age, this golden age, that just worked in harmony and balance with everything. Then you go into the silver age. This gets a little bit more developed, regaining. Then you go into the bronze age, which brings forth its things and its combination of the high and the low, the mix and the unmix. And then you get to the Kali Yuga, which is the fourth age. As was stated, it's the shortest. You can gain more in this age, but it's also an age where we have made the materialistic nature a god unto ourselves. And we're not that. We're just going through an age. We're still pure spirit. Yes.
We have to keep in mind we're talking about the state of affairs from a universal cosmic point of view. There is no creature in the entire universe that can say, I am myself. I think, therefore, I am.
Descartes said that.
Only a self-conscious spiritual being. And when we begin there, that's where the battle begins. Civilization. And when we compare the two and say, I am, then we start from there. No other creature on this earth can say that, but self-conscious, spiritual being. So that means that through cooperation, human beings learn there was a progress and many other things. But when you have selfishness, an animalistic point of view, just look around and see what the wars have created.
Very true. And the thing of that is, if we look at, we are the only self-conscious kingdom. So if we also look at the idea as the self-conscious kingdom, we are the ones that need to help the consciousness in all other kingdoms go as far back down as the mineral. There is cohesion there. We see some sort of consciousness, but not self-consciousness, but minerals to pull together. Look at your next kingdom you could look at. You could look from the mineral kingdom to the vegetable kingdom. We see intelligence there. We see that a plant knows to go towards the sun, that a plant needs water. It'll go where it'll find it, that it's an interplay. We see that they're in the animal kingdom. We see instinct. It's a puppy is born, a kitten is born, a goat, a little lamb, whatever. There is intelligence in there that's intuitively within it. And if we look at the birth of a little baby, and have anybody has studied the stages that they go through in those, quote, 9 months, that development is touched on the mineral kingdom, the plant kingdom, and the animal kingdom. Our bodies are made up of all the lower kingdoms. So again, we have an interconnection with all the kingdoms, but we're the ones that can help raise them, or we're the ones that can take them down. And Mother Nature has its way. There is just so much that can be done in any one time of evolution that Mother Nature is going to blow it off. It just comes that way, and we see it in floods, we see it in fires, we see it in hurricanes, we see it in eruptions from volcanoes. The balance is very difficult. Sometimes we think Mother Nature would be better off without human beings around because it knows how to balance and how to keep it. We're the ones that give the incentive to the effects that will come back to us. So these are things we have to think about. Yes.
Just to return to the previous question for a moment as to why this Iron Age moves so quickly. It's helpful to think of these ages as cycles. Cycles is a universal law, and these are cycles within cycles, and some cycles move quicker than others because we're told a cycle is basically a return of a previous impression. It's the effect that follows cause. So in this dark age, besides its characteristics, cause follows effects, impressions return much more quickly than they might otherwise. And just as we know, we can be in a certain frame of mind in a class, and what seems to last several hours could really be good in our minds, at least can go very quickly, and vice versa, and even in dreams, in different states of consciousness. The perception of time varies according to the state of our mind in those states.
Oh, definitely. The dreams idea is a very good example, because in a dream, one can go through such a dream after dream after dream, and they wake up and they say, wow, I was really out. I really dreamt a lot. And they're going, you just fell asleep. It hasn't been 5-10 minutes. Time in a dream is completely different. Time in a dream has colors, has sounds, and it's, we're acting in it, we're watching in it. It's like, but this physical body is asleep, lying down, sitting up in a chair, we don't know, but the fact is, we're not using anything to do with this physical body in those dream states. And look at what we can go through. People have had lifetimes in their dreams, and then we find out they've barely, time is different on that state. Time is different within the universe, within the planets all around us. They're all a bit different. So cycles are one of the teachings of the reoccurring of cycles, and that we're the same ones that go through these cycles. As was stated, we've been through these other ages many times. Yes?
Just so people don't get the idea that this Iron Age is going to be gone tomorrow.
Yes.
The Iron Age is 432,000 years long, and we're only past 5,000.
Yeah, only. We've got a long way to go and many more lifetimes. But we're the ones that have to start to think that way. And, you know, it's not like it's the type of thing that once you start thinking that way, it becomes it. We have to work at it. We have to work on it really hard. With all the technology that's around today, it's very difficult to find that little time where you can have that little bit of peace and just be. Yes.
A couple of times, observing has been mentioned, the observer. So what really is this observer, and how do we activate that in us in order to be an agent for change?
That's it. That's the basic question.
That's it. That's all.
That's a big question. We would just like to remind you, for most of us, we saw this on Wednesday night's class. We have extra copies that were left over. But it's just to explain the higher self, the observer, the perceiver, the spiritual ego within man. Now we're getting to the spiritual soul, or we could say Buddhi. The inner higher ego versus the lower personal ego. It's a two-sided thing. I had to staple mine together. But feel free to pick one of these up on your way out, because it will give you some idea of these basic teachings. And do you ever remember, maybe as a child, maybe they didn't have it then, that you had like an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other? And you're drawn this way, and then you're drawn this way. There's still that one part of your nature. It's like the Lady of Justice with the balancing act. There's that part of the center of you that knows about this side and knows about this side. It's like an oversee. But we, in this physical form, have got to make the decision. Am I going with what I should do, or am I going of what I really want to do? But do we really want to do? And then there's that part of our nature that's watching it. It's like, it's very crowded inside when you start thinking about it. Because if you start really trying to make some sort of judgment, most of us are always, I should have done this, or I should have done that, or I should have said this. Yeah, after the fact. But who was there all that time watching all this? That's that inner true nature. That's that part of the teachings that great teachers like the Buddha had, of that walking the middle path. We have to learn to do that, to be able to go through situations, not being pulled one way or the other too much, till we can see, but what is the best for all? If you look at it that way, whatever thing you're doing, not so much what's in it for me. And we did go through that time period where there was the me factor. And it evolved to what's in it for me. But That's not balance. That's not harmony. That isn't brotherhood. That isn't universal. We're looking for that part of our nature. What can I do to be a help to someone else? It takes it off of that personal nature. It takes it off this costume. And if we could learn to live through it and not say I should have done or could have done, but know ahead of time. And the other thing is the speed. For most of us sitting in this audience today, I'm looking around, there are very few of us old people that would remember certain things. But we do remember there was a time when we would sit at a dinner table and talk. What did you do today? What did you do? Today, we're so busy interacting with things. Things has come to the calm world. I got to get this one. Did you hear about the phone that they came out now? It does this and it's that. It's like the youth of today, there are certain things they'll never be able to feel in their lifetime unless they start changing in their youth, because they've got a longer, people are living longer. They have a long thing to go through, but it's like we have to learn that there are things that are things that are here today and they're going to be gone tomorrow. If we have the attitude, I can take from it what I need and yet I can put it down and deal without it. There is a lot for us to think about in a judgment situation.
So to follow up, with the observer, it's becoming more and more difficult in a way, more materialism, more devices and whatnot. But it was always difficult, but it's still always available, because it's like a shaving process. We're not our thoughts. We're not our feelings. We are not these bodies.
Right.
I am that I am. I have unlimited power and ability, yet I haven't realized that yet. But I should know that I am beyond this existence. The word existence means to stand out, and we need to center ourselves truly in order to calm, to get a perspective, to calm all the noise, all the static, tune it out.
Yes, and only we internally can express that and do that. If we work on trying to figure out this whole plan of my lifetime and any lifetime of what I can actually put aside and what I can actually must act on immediately. Yes.
Even in an age of materialism as our own, universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. The most materialistic person we could think of could not get where they want to be in the acquirement of things without the sacrifice of others that help them that way. They can't do it alone. Even if we just think of what their bodies need to survive, that's provided by others. So sacrifice and interdependence is a fact of life in any age. So it would seem then that the way to make spiritual progress in this age of materialism is to learn how to sacrifice, what that really means in the spiritual sense, not the way it gets materialized very often.
Very true. And in connection with that, it's something that one has to come upon on their own. You can read things, you can see things, you can hear things, but to be able to get to that point to acknowledge it, and once it's acknowledged, we are told, it makes all the difference on how we get through any one lifetime. It really makes a difference on how we look at situations, at the people we meet on the street, how we look at how we're treating our planet, how we ooh and ah over little sweet things. We need to learn to ooh and ah over individuals. We need to be able to look into each other's eyes and know that feeling of unity. You know, if you have blonde hair and blue eyes and you cry, if you have brown hair, brown skin and brown eyes, you cry. A mother cries if something happens to her child. It's not any different. Of all the differences we see underneath those differences, it's still all from the one universal idea that we're all one, disregard of how we think or how we see. And if there is a way to see it and try to understand it and have the guts to keep trying and trying, eventually, how do you think we made habits? You do it over and over and over, and then all of a sudden, you don't have to think about it. It's a habit. You want to get rid of it? It's not easy. It's got a mind of its own. You think this way. You act this way. It's a battle. It's the Gita is a good guideline. You could use the story of the Bhagavad Gita because you have that war within of the higher and the lower. You have Krishna. We have Krishna. We are Krishna. You have Arjuna. We are Arjunas. We have the groundwork for the battlefield. So the fact of the matter is, if reading that on a daily basis could give you some understanding about what's going on within, you could understand why we have to work on it without. There is a battle going on within us all the time. What is the right thing to do? What is the selfish thing to do? What is the altruistic thing to do? Do we take the time to think to make that decision? Yes.
We heard in these rooms long ago the expression, raise the self by the self. So when I saw it in writing, raise the self, small letters,
yes.
And then second
yes.
self, by the self. Well, this seemed to be our topic, this one, right? There are two selves? And that one must raise the other. It seems that the smaller letter, so, is inferred to be in charge. So we're supposed to raise it? What does the term mean, raise the self by the self?
Okay, that is true. That's what we were talking about here. That battle within. We have let the personality, this physical form, take over. And there is a part of our nature, as stated, that capital S can be a help to break through. Because this small S is only going to be here, folks, this one time around. You will not see this full personality again. You might see aspects of it. That's how you get geniuses who go in one field or another over and over again if you stride for it. But the fact of the matter is, this whole physical way of thinking and acting and interacting with people, you won't see this personality in full again. You'll see only parts of it. So who knows in some lifetime where or when you will be. But if there are Buddhas, if there are great sages, whether it be from the East or the West, the fact of the matter, they're here. They've been, they're here again. We might not see them as they were at one period of evolution, but the fact of the matter, there are those who have lived through everything we're going through today many times and have learned how to get that balance, that harmony. And it states, as Krishna tells Arjuna, you have, and look how many times, it takes 18 chapters in the Gita for Arjuna to keep going, I know you told me this, how to do this, and how, could you tell me again? I don't remember. Well, that's us. That higher part of the nature, Krishna is showing him, you are that. You are that. And Arjuna needs to know a lot. 18 chapters we go through that he keeps coming back to. Could you tell me again? Well, there's a lot of ancient philosophies that all say the same thing. If we want to look for it and keep trying, we can keep asking, can you tell me again? You will find something that hits your niche that's going to say, this is what I want to know. This is what I need to do. Just keep searching. Yes.
This idea of raising the self by the self, as was pointed out earlier in the class, even religious eye can be materialized, and there are some religious devotees who believe that they cannot achieve anything without the grace from some divine being. So what this idea is saying, raise the self by the self, as personalities, we by ourselves can't raise the self. We do need the help or the inspiration of our higher nature. So one way to raise the self or to make progress in this materialistic age, if we feel an inspiration from within, if we feel a suggestion from our nature to be of benefit, not to argue against it, not to be ashamed of it, not to be afraid of it, but to follow.
Do it, follow it, do it.
And
yeah.
The more we do, the stronger it will, the stronger that light will become.
There are a lot of hints given. There are hints about keeping like a diary type of thing that will help you keep track of your daily ways and lights. Keeping track of your dreams, reading devotional books before you go to bed, and to go into a darkened room. No TVs, no phones. Just a black, dark room. It's going to love it. That's going to let you go to sleep so much easier and stay asleep without any flickering attachments. But this whole series of the development, we think, is very interesting. And it makes one, you have to have a sense of humor about yourself and life too, because even though we make hundreds of mistakes, we have the ability to get up and keep trying. So, in closing, we would like to just give you, this happens to be a devotional book, some little short thought to think of. It says, shun ignorance, and likewise, shun illusion. Avert thy face from the world's deceptions. Mistrust thy senses, they are false. But within thy body, the shrine of all thy sensations, seek for the impersonal, for the eternal man, and having sought him out, look inward, thou art Buddha. Class is finished. Thank you very much.